Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking a little bit of Chicago Bears, but I think mostly we are going to be very angrily talking about the Chicago Cubs. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable pricing. The season is over now, but the new season, the 2017-2018 season, starts in just 3 short months. So head on over to icehogs.com, sign up for season tickets, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you, and definitely check out the Ice Hogs. Alex, rough week this week, I would say.
Yeah, this is all coming to the end of the first half of the baseball season. That's kind of what the focus is here. Yeah, I can't really say anything overly positive over the past week in Chicago sports. So yeah, really not a good one.
Yeah. I don't really want to talk White Sox because they're just bad, and until they have a trade, really not much to say. There really hasn't been much Blackhawks. The Bulls started the summer league, and campaign is awful, so I don't really have much to say. But there's a couple interesting Bears things. I don't know if you heard this, but a former Chicago Bear and Hall of Famer, a member of the 85 Chicago Bears, Dan Hampton, said that if my team had Jay Cutler as quarterback, we would have won 4 Super Bowls. I don't know if you read that.
I did see that comment, yes, and I saw a lot of responding comments to that, calling him crazy, calling him dumb, calling him senile. I thought it was interesting. I think that he was kind of getting at the fact that maybe if we had just kind of the production that Cutler had, that they would have won. I mean, the defense was pretty there in the 80s from what I know, even past 85. But, you know, I don't really know how to certainly say if it would or wouldn't, but it's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things the Bears could have done. But, I still stand by this point, is Jay Cutler would have been an amazing quarterback in the 80s and early 90s. That gunslinger type mentality and throwing a lot of interception, that flew back then. Like, that was okay. You could throw, I mean, Brett Favre threw a lot of interceptions.
Yes, he did.
It was okay. And if you're Jay Cutler and in that era where throwing interceptions is okay, just think about it, is people aren't going to be dogging him for interceptions. So he's just going to be okay. He's going to go out there with his confidence and swagger and be able to play hard.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you that, yeah.
And you have that, the offensive line was great during those that era. You had Walter Payton at running back. So really, if you would have had steady quarterback play, I mean, you had Jim McMahon, who was fairly good, but he was injured, and, you know, your backups were Mike Tomczak for a while, and you just had Doug Flutie. It was just a mishmash of backup quarterbacks. If you had somebody like Jay Cutler, I could see them being an actual dynasty rather than just one team that put together probably the best season ever.
Yeah, no, there's definitely truth to all that, especially back then where it wasn't as big of a passer game back then. Having a guy like Jay Cutler who has a really good arm, I think that would be really advantageous to have. And he was very underrated at moving around in the pocket and running, so that was another good thing to have on a team like that. So, yeah, there were definitely advantages that a player like Jay Cutler would bring back then. It's kind of funny to think about considering how the game has changed since then, but, you know, it stirred for great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, is Dan, what had Dan Hampton said true? I think breaking up the defense a little bit, not in the unwillingness of old man Hallis paying people, probably was more detrimental than the quarterback situation. But I mean, if you would have kept that defense intact and put a guy like Cutler in there that had a big arm and could scramble, it would have been a really imposing team.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of disappointment from the Bears of the mid-80s because, you know, I wasn't alive, but I hear the stories from so many people saying that when they won, people thought for sure this was going to win multiple titles with that scheme, and it never happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was probably one of the bigger disappointments in sports that this team that was just so dominant. I mean, just the way, not only just what they did in that season, but what they did in the playoffs. They absolutely dominated everybody in the regular season.
Except for the Dolphins.
That was an anomaly. And
yeah,
you had Doug Flute, Mike Ditka and Buddy Ryan at each other's throats, fist fighting each other at that game. And, you know, it all just went downhill. And so they had one bad game, but other than that, they just dominated people. And then in the playoffs, they pitched shutout after shutout in the playoffs.
Yeah, because it was the L.A. Rams and who's the other
Giants.
Team? The Giants, that's right.
And the Rams and the Giants were really good teams. So it was, and then they went and just decimated the Patriots.
And you know what's funny? Remember, you'd probably, I mean, how much do you remember the 85 Bears? You probably remember a decent amount, yes?
Yeah, I was young. I was like 8, but it was so big. It wasn't like, I don't remember a lot from when I was 8, but it would be like, you know, your first time going to like Disney World or something. It was so exciting and it was so bigger than life that you vividly remember everything.
Right. 'Cause I was going to ask if you remember watching that Super Bowl and when the Patriots kicked that field goal, did you have any doubt whatsoever that they would win, or you just kind of laugh it off and they would eventually just kill them? Was there any thought of doubt when they were down early, even if that sounds kind of silly?
No, I mean, it was weird because if I knew what I know now, just from my Chicago sports anxiety, I would have been a wreck. But I was young and I just was so full of confidence. And I mean, the Bears recorded the Super Bowl shuffle in like week 4 of the season.
Yeah.
It's not like they did that after it was so bigger than life. And you just knew that they were going to come back and they came back early and they came back often and they just ran roughshod on the Patriots. And, I actually have the game on VHS tape still that I
think, you know, we do as well. I think my dad taped it.
Yeah, I need to upgrade it to like a, because I don't even have a VHS player anymore. I need to upgrade it to like a you know, digital version or to a DVD or something. But it was such a satisfying game. They were just dominant.
Yeah, I mean, because weren't the Patriots the wild card team that year in the AFC?
It was a surprise that they made it.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really interesting had the Dolphins made it. But
the one team that beat them that year, yeah.
Yeah, because I think the Bears would have just, you know, kicked the crap out of them in that game. Dan Marino doesn't think so. He thinks they would have beat the Bears again. But,
well, of course he's going to say that. I mean,
he needs, if he can't win a real Super Bowl, he needs to win an imaginary one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, it's really funny when I think about that 85 season and I think about like how big it was and you just think about the Bears now, it's like, what a fall from grace. I know it's been over 30 years, and it's been, you know, pretty bad for a while since then. Probably more bad than good, but to think that this team was once like the proudest franchise in sports to come to this, it's just weird to think about. And, you know, I wish I could see something like that. The closest I saw to something like that was when we made the Super Bowl in 06, but obviously they didn't win that game. But, you know, it's just weird to think about.
Yeah, this has been a bad team for a long time, and it's, you know, you start to see, I mean, you know, every once in a while you get a playoff berth and you get excited about it, but it's not anything sustainable. And suddenly now you're starting to feel this little bit of, well maybe what we're doing is right, and I can start seeing the forest through the trees.
Yeah. We can only pray it gets there. We've been somewhat close there, what, two times since? 2010, 06, that's really about it.
And 06 was, I don't know, that team, even though they were, they finished the season 13-3 or something.
I think it was 14-2.
I don't know, whatever it was a really good record, but I just, they had so many lucky wins.
Right.
I think it was the Browns and Mike Brown got the interception. I can't remember who it was against. Maybe it was the Browns, but he had the interception late in the game to steal a win, and it was just a lot of fluky luck wins. And I know that you in the NFL you a little bit you create your own luck, but
it wasn't the 85 Bears that just grinded you into the ground and didn't look back.
Yeah, and I just knew going into the playoffs that they weren't gonna really seriously contend, and they didn't. And the Super Bowl team that went against the Colts, that was another team that I had all the hopes that they could win, but I mean there was no way I was gonna put money on them beating the Colts. And even when Hester returned the opening kickoff, I mean, I was losing my mind. I lived in Philly at the time, so I didn't have any Bears fans there, so it was just me losing my mind. I was wearing my Hester jersey and going crazy, and then reality came right back to me quickly.
Right, when he returned that kickoff, there was that big spark in my brain that just said, oh my God, we're going to win the Super Bowl. And then it didn't happen. I have a lot of Colts fan friends who I've talked to, and you know, they told me, they're like, you know, if the Bears would have had a real offensive unit, they probably could have won. And I kind of agree with that, but the fact of the matter is they didn't. And when I look back at 06, I don't look back at it as something devastating like 2003 or something like that, because I think at the end of the day, we were really lucky to see that team make it to the Super Bowl, because they easily could not have.
Yeah, another thing I read, I think it was one of the safeties from the Colts, later, a couple years later, after that Super Bowl, said, he said that they knew exactly what the Bears were going to run because their offense was so predictable.
Yeah.
That they knew exactly what they were going to do, and they were geared up for it. And that, not surprising, is that's a hallmark of a Lovey team, is that he puts everything into the defense, and the offense is just there because they have to have an offense.
Right, yeah. I mean, at least I feel like the 2010 team had a bit more of a spread offense, a bit more, you know. I think Cutler is better than Rex Grossman, and he has a better arm, and, you know, you had Matt Forte, so I think that offense was a bit better than the 06 one, so, you know, I don't know. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I'm looking at the 2006 Bears. They finished 13-3.
It was 13-3. Okay.
Yeah, they were 7-0, lost to the Dolphins, won two more, lost against the Patriots, and then lost the season finale against the Packers.
Well, weren't they resting everyone that day anyway?
It was a season that they so much luck, and that I just never really expected anything from it.
Right, and that's why I don't look back at 06 like, oh, we should have had that, we should have had that. I mean, yeah, we had the lead early on, but, you know, they knew what we were going to do, so what do you, you know.
Yeah, and then...
You know, I'm going to say this also. Feel free to agree or disagree with me. I want to get your thoughts on this. I think had the 2010 Bears made it to the Super Bowl, I think their chances, that team's chances of beating that Steelers team were higher than that Bears team beating the Colts and Peyton Manning.
That Steelers team was pretty good, but I don't know. The Bears were, they had a nice record that year, and they just, I don't know. I just don't have confidence in the Bears, I guess, sometimes in the playoffs.
Well, just, it's kind of hard to since we haven't won since 85.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. I thought there was something about that 2010 team that, I don't know. I liked their chances better in the Super Bowl than 06. I mean, obviously, we didn't make it to the Super Bowl, and this would also have to mean if Cutler didn't get hurt, because if the Bears somehow pulled that NFC Championship win with a hurt Cutler and Caleb Haney, yeah, we're not winning that Super Bowl, but I think a full, healthy 2010 team could beat that Steelers team. I really do.
I mean, the first round they played, it was the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the year the Seahawks finished with a losing record?
I think they only had like 7 wins. I think they were like 7-9.
And it was a close game. I mean, the Seahawks came barreling back at the fourth quarter.
Well, I remember that game. I remember watching that game, and I feel like the Bears just kind of stopped playing. Like, they were up by so much, they just kind of stopped giving a rat's ass. That's what I remember. Because I remember they dominated the first half, and it was all but over, and they just kind of, in the fourth quarter, they just kind of sat back and didn't really do much. That's how I remember it.
And then the NFC Championship game against the Packers was so frustrating. It was such a Bears way to lose. You know, your quarterback getting hurt, everybody turning on the quarterback, and losing to the Packers.
And almost coming back in that one with Caleb Haney, all to be ended in an interception.
Yeah, it was. Caleb Haney would have been a hero if he could come back from that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you remember when Todd Collins came into that game?
Oh.
Yeah.
I was at my friend's house, and we were losing our minds. We were just so livid.
Honestly, like, I was a junior in high school, and I'll be honest, when Cutler went down and that one pass that Todd Collins had, he tried to make like a 10-yard pass that didn't go like 5 yards. Like, I turned it off. I was done. I was completely done.
It was so painful. It was so painful. It was like, I would have rather have gone 0-16 than have that game happen, because it was just an embarrassment.
Well, what was worse is that it was against the Packers. If that same game would have happened against Atlanta that year, it would have sucked, but it's like, oh, well, whatever. But it had to be against Green Bay. And you lose to Green Bay on your home turf in the NFC Championship. That sucks, because that game stunk from the beginning. Because you remember the first drive. The Packers just cruised down the field on that first drive.
Yeah, and then it was 14-0. You know, it's one thing to give up 14 points in the first half, but they scored none.
Yeah.
And that's the kiss of death right there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I did not feel good at all after going down 14-0. Because usually that season, I'm like, all right, you know, even if we're down, we could still come back. But in that NFC Championship game, I'm like, we're screwed. And I was really dreading going to school the next day and having to listen to the Packers fans of the place. I mean, you know, it's mostly Bears fans, but, you know, you have that group of Packers fans, and I was not looking forward to school the next day with those guys.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I lived in Philadelphia. Oh, the 2010, as I was back here. But it was 2006 when they lost the Super Bowl. I was living in Philadelphia, and I just got ridden by the Eagles fans, because they're not just, they don't just cheer for their team. They hate every other team and they enjoy when they lose.
Oh,
they,
for sure.
Their fans suffer. But 2010 is, it was mostly around Bears fans, but it was still, it was just a miserable feeling.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine being one of the Bears fans that lives in Wisconsin. I mean, God be with those people. I couldn't imagine what that was like. Ugh. I mean, losing to the Packers is something we've almost come used to, but it still is never a good feeling.
I mean, I just remember growing up is you just, you know, the Bears, like the Packers was like an automatic win for most of my life. And then at this one point, they became the team that just destroyed the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the overall season series is like tied going back 95 years. So it's like different eras had different levels. There was never like a back forth, back forth. It's like one decade, the Bears would dominate. The next decade, the Packers would dominate. It was kind of a back and forth type deal. So I always found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is kind of true. Is yeah, it's eras and, but whatever. Interesting rivalry because it's always lopsided. It's never like a, it's never one of those rivalries that they, even if one team is bad and one's good, that they fight it out and it's a close game. It's usually just a lopsided game usually.
Yeah. And, as of late, it's not been lopsided in our favor. And there are several instances where the Bears should have beaten the Packers and then fell apart at the end. But, you know, hopefully that'll change sooner or later.
And the one other bit of Bears I want to talk about is Mitch Trubisky hasn't signed a contract yet. And we're like 3 weeks away from training camp.
Yeah, that's a little surprising.
And usually the Bears are really good with getting draft picks signed. And I haven't heard anything publicly about it, which hopefully is a good thing. I'm going to guess that it's over offset language. And just for our listeners, if you don't know what offset language is, basically is in under the current collective bargaining agreement, first round draft picks are 4-year contracts with an option for a fifth, and it's a team option. And you have to decide during the beginning of the third season whether or not you're going to pick up the option for the fifth year. And if you have offset language, which is what the teams want, that means if, say, you owe the player $10 million for that fifth year and you decide to cut them because they were terrible or they were injured, and another team signs them, let's say for $5 million, you're only on the hook for $5 million. So it basically subtracts off that new contract from what you owe. But if there's no offset language, which is what the players and their representatives want, it means that they get to double dip. So they get to collect the $10 million that you owe them plus whatever they get on top of this team salary. And so that was what was in some of the more recent holdouts for first round picks. And I hope that's not the case with Trubisky, because if you're the Bears and you're bickering over that, it's silly because it's just a little bit of money. And if you are really that confident to move up with this guy, then you should be confident enough that he's going to last for 5 years and go through his whole rookie contract. So with Trubisky, the fear is if you hold out and you're a quarterback, you lose that much development, and it really is going to set you back as a player. And that's the last thing the Bears need with this hopefully franchise quarterback.
I was just going to say that is the last thing they want. If this is their guy, the one they want to develop and work with, the one that's going to be the face of the franchise in the future, you don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do whatever you have to do to get him into camp and have him be ready when it's time to play, be absolutely ready and not, well, I missed all the training camp and then I was trying to catch up during the season.
You do not want that.
Yeah. The thing is, people don't seem to realize is that you learn by repetition, and the way the collective bargaining agreement works in the NFL is you have so little time that you're allowed to wear pads and actually practice that there's only so many reps to go around. And if you skip them, then when you get back, the player who's got your starting spot is getting 80% of the reps. So you're only getting 20% of like minimal reps anyway. And that's how you learn. You want to know why Kevin White is not as productive as we'd hoped? Because he missed his whole rookie season with an injury and came back and was still working through that injury and trying to learn things. Missed most of his second season. Now he's going to be in his third season, and he's still learning things that he should have learned in training camp during his rookie year, but that he missed because of injury.
And that right there should set an example why you got to get this locked up. I mean, you really do.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter why they miss it, whether it's because there was no contract or because of injury, you miss camp and you're really far behind.
Yep.
If you are Ray Lewis in your 12th season, training camp is pointless. And if you notice, a lot of veteran free agents, they won't, even if there's a team interested in them, they don't sign until training camp is over because they don't want to do it. They're not learning anything at that point. It's just hard on their body. But these young players, they're actually learning and getting the reps and learning the team and learning the coaching staff. And they're learning how to be professionals from a college level.
And especially when you're a rebuilding Bears team and you're using all this youth to try to build for the future, you want them learning appropriately and not in a scatterbrained manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been pleasantly surprised with the way he's spoken and what people have been saying about him in the workout so far.
Me too.
It's going to be super detrimental and a big blow to not only the team but the fans and him if he doesn't get this deal signed. And I know he has said publicly that even if there's no contract, he's going to be out there playing because he knows it'll eventually get done. But I guarantee all of his people, his agents and everything, are going to say flat out no. If there's no contract, he's not playing.
Right.
So it's you just hope that they finally can get this done because the Bears have been absolutely amazing over the last decade in getting draft picks signed and early that you have to
feel
that.
That's one thing they have done.
Yeah, that's one thing they've been phenomenal about. And so you just hope that in these next 3 weeks they get it done so there's no holdout, there's nothing. And even if it's having to give up the offset language, which isn't that big of a deal. I mean, sure, he's going to make a bunch of money, but in that offset deal, it means basically you're saying if he sucks during that fifth year and we cut him, that you're going to end up paying, I don't know, $8 million or something extra. So it's money. I don't care. It's not my money. It's the McCaskey family money. So
I don't care. They have plenty of it.
Yeah, so spend it. Get it done.
That's the nice thing about being a fan of a Chicago sports team. You don't worry as much about the money because we know we have the money with our market size.
Yeah, that's, you know, we just don't have the money. We don't have this, or we're small or mid-market team. No, we're Chicago. We've got the money. Just spend it. Is you're already charging us an arm and a leg for everything, is might as well put a good product in the field.
Right.
I guess we've stalled long enough. Is we should just jump right into the Chicago Cubs, 2 feet, right?
Yeah, I think that this is the one we've all been preparing for. I've certainly been preparing for this show. Got a lot to say.
I do too. Why don't you start?
Okay, so we ended the first half today, going to the All-Star break, something that we've much needed. We are below 500. We are 5.5 back of Milwaukee, tied with the Cardinals. And in this week, we've played several big games, if you want to call them that, one against Milwaukee and one to close out the first half. And what did the Cubs do? They absolutely crapped the bed. 10 runs in the first inning today. It could have been avoided if Bryant would have turned a double play ball, but no, he boots it, and they score 10 runs in one inning. And against Milwaukee, they lose that 11-2. I'm lost for words. What is going on with this team? Everything looks terrible. The only thing that doesn't look terrible is the bullpen. Everything else looks terrible. I'm lost for words.
I'm right there with you. And a summary of today, I turned it on late because we were talking about going. We have some friends that were in town, and we were going to go to the game. But when we were buying the tickets, they got sold out from under us on StubHub. So it was
That's a blessing right there.
Yeah, so we ended up, we were going to go down to Wrigleyville and just see if we can get, like, last-minute tickets, and we started running late because everyone woke up late. But,
And I feel so sorry for the people who spent hundreds of dollars to come out and watch that garbage.
Yeah.
I really am.
With StubHub fees for upper deck outfield tickets, we were going to go, after fees and everything, it was going to be $82 a piece from all of us.
Think of the people who spent on better seats, closer seats, and much more than that. Plus the people, you know, people spend money on those seats and travel far.
Yeah, there's people that, I feel really bad for the people that traveled for that game, came from out of town, and maybe their only opportunity to see the Cubs this season because they come from Iowa or wherever. It's an absolute debacle.
This first half was an absolute debacle.
Yeah, I mean, this first inning basically was what's wrong with the Cubs. Here's how the first inning went. Josh Harrison singled. Francisco Cervelli grounded out to third. Harrison went to second. McCutchen walked. David Freese reached on a Chris Bryant error that loaded the bases. Josh Bell singled to right, scoring Harrison, which made it 1-0. Jose Osuna doubled down the left field line, scoring McCutchen and Freeze, making it 3-0. Jordy Mercer singled to left, scoring Bell and Osuna, making it 5-0. Max Moroff walked. Chad Kuhl sacrifice bunt, moved Mercer to third, Moroff to second. Josh Harrison walked to load the bases. Francisco Cervelli hit a grand slam to make it 9-0, and then Andrew McCutchen followed it up with a solo home run, 10-0. And John Lester was pulled after 53 pitches.
I turned it off. I'd say as soon as Ozuna doubled to make it 3-0, I said, you know what, screw this, I'm out, I'm going to see Spider-Man, and that was a much better choice. But there I am, sitting on my way to the theater, sitting in the theater before the movie starts, seeing all these notifications, and I had to blink twice, three times, four times, five times. This is the team that won the World Series last year? I mean, yeah, we all knew that there was probably going to be a regression. I didn't expect 103 wins. I expected mid-90s wins, but I didn't expect a dumpster fire like this.
Yeah, it was a debacle. And what summed it up even more is the Cubs came to bat and goose egg.
Of course.
Goose egg.
Of course.
And the first inning of runs, they've given up in the first half of this season, they've already given up more first inning runs than they did all of last season.
That's crazy to think about. It's crazy.
So it's first innings have been a problem. This team can't hit. The starting rotation is schizophrenic. John Lester is supposed to be your ace, and he can't even make it out of the first against a lowly Pirates team. Jake Arrieta is at a loss for words of what he's doing. Kyle Hendricks is still injured. Eddie Butler is a rookie. I don't know what you expect from him.
He has the best ERA of the starters. What does that tell you?
Yeah, and you know, the other day, you didn't think he was going to get out of the first inning.
I know.
I mean, he ended up doing well, but he had some rough spots in the game. And Mike Montgomery is not a starter. He's called into duty to be a starter. And John Lackey is too old.
Yeah, he's pretty much done here. And when John Lackey does show some flashes of goodness, you know, when he goes like six innings and gives up only two runs, they don't hit for him.
Yeah. And I just, everyone keeps talking about, well, when this team turns it on, that's a farce and a myth. This, you don't just turn it on. It's, this team has shown no signs of life consistently.
None.
When was the last time they went on a three-game road winning streak?
This year? A road streak? To be honest, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, it's been bad. It's been
they haven't won back-to-back games in over 2 weeks.
It's really bad, and they're at the point now where if they don't come out this after the All-Star break and put a streak together, you could probably stick a fork in them, because Milwaukee is not fading away, and there's talks of them trading for Jose Quintana now.
I saw that. I saw that, and I thought, wow, they're going to mortgage away their future and go for it. That's ballsy, but, I mean, right now it doesn't look like we're going to catch him. I'll tell you that a lot of people are, including myself, are frustrated with how somehow Milwaukee's playing so well, but then I keep telling myself, we did this to ourselves. The Cubs did this to themselves. If they were any sort of consistent, if they showed any sort of consistency, we would be with or above the Brewers. If we had maybe 10 more wins, I wouldn't be worried at all. But that's not the case right now. We're below 500, showing no signs of turning things around. Every time we get a big win, it's, oh, is this the one? Is this the one? No! We've had several good wins, and then we crap the bed the next day.
Yeah, it's like every time you have a, well, this is going to be a statement win, or, oh, Schwarber hit a grand slam. This is going to be, he's going to turn it around now. Every time there's one of those moments and we're all convinced that this is it. The next day they go and they poop the bed and they don't show up.
I really thought that Cardinals sweep was going to make everything right. I thought 100% that was going to make everything right.
I think we all thought that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep hearing now is, well, you know, the All-Star break, they'll turn it on in the second half. The Cubs will make a trade at the deadline. I'll be right. And I'm at the point now, and if you disagree, please, I would love to hear, you know, your thoughts on this. But I'm at the point now where I don't want them to make a trade at the All-Star break or the trade deadline, because I don't think this team is good enough to go deep the way they've been playing, and all you're going to do by bringing in somebody at the trade deadline is overpay and give up young players when you don't need to.
I don't want to trade for a rental. That's what I definitely don't want to do. If we're going to trade for something, it's got to be something we're going to have for multiple years. If they do something like that, I'll be okay with it, because it helps us, maybe not necessarily today if they're still not doing well, but it helps us in the future. But I do not want to see them go for a rental piece. No, don't do that. So I think there are still trades that could potentially be made with this team, but a rental piece like last year, I don't think you're going to see that. I think if you do see a trade, it's going to be A, for a multiple-year player, or B, a small trade, kind of like maybe a round of Mike Montgomery type trade, maybe a little less, but it's going to be no blockbuster rental piece that's going to put them over the top this year and this year only, like Aroldis Chapman last year in the bullpen. You're not going to see that.
What pitchers or what trades do you realistically think they could make?
Realistically?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. The Chris Archer thing has been a talk for a long time, but the Rays are contenders right now. I don't think they're going to want to sell him.
Yeah, I heard on one of the baseball shows over the weekend, and they said basically that's completely off the table. It's not happening.
Right, and I'm not surprised either. Sonny Gray, I think, is still an interesting one. We all know that a Quintana Cubs Sox trade is not going to happen. We just know it's not going to happen. There was the interesting talk about Justin Verlander, and at first I'm like, heck no. But if there was a way to not give up much, but just kind of take on some of the money, because I'm really not worried about money with the Chicago Cubs, I'd be kind of open to that. As long as we wouldn't give up a top prospect or one of our core players for Justin Verlander, there's no way I would give up any sort of player value for a player like Justin Verlander, who was 34 and got a lot of mileage. But if we didn't give up much and just took on some salary, that would be a lot more tempting. I don't really know how solid those rumors are, but it's something to think about. At the end of the day, what we want is going to be really hard to get, and there really isn't a lot of. So, I don't really know of any trade that I think is realistic right now of long-term control with a younger player. If you put all those things together, I think I have a hard time seeing it right now.
Sonny Gray is an interesting one. He's only 27. He's got two after this season, he's got two more years left of arbitration eligibility before he becomes unrestricted free agent. So you'd be having him for 2 years of probably $5-6 million each year. Quintana is an interesting one, but I just can't see.
I don't think that's happening.
Work. I think it's just a pipe dream. I'm hearing Stroman not going to be traded. Chris Archer not being traded. Verlander is the name.
Yep.
He is signed after this season. He signed 2018, 2019, and 2020. So three more seasons. And it's the next two seasons, he's at $28 million a year. And then the third year, he's at $22 million a year. But here's the thing, is if you can put together a win streak, even a mediocre one, and get within 2-3 games of the Brewers, or maybe even closer by the time the trade deadline comes, I would fully back going with the Justin Verlander trade. But like you said, is if they can get only some of the contract, you know, maybe have Detroit pay $10 million per season and the Cubs pay the rest and give up a bottom, you know, a 10 to 15, you know, a top 15 player in their prospect, you know.
It'd be kind of like what it kind of reminds me of is Soriano, when we just dealt him to kind of dump his salary as the primary thing. It's kind of how I see that situation.
And maybe even throw in a second prospect if they add Avila to sweeten the deal. And then you think about it is, all right, that's a lot of money you're still paying to Verlander, but look at Verlander stats from last year. They're pretty good. And Verlander has not lost any velocity. When you lose velocity, that's the scary part. Like, Arrieta lost velocity. That scares me. Verlander hasn't lost any velocity. His walks are up. His contact rate is up. But he's not lost velocity.
Well, he's lost velocity compared to 2010, 2011. But compared to this year and last year, it seems pretty consistent. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's not been that precipitous drop every year like an aging player. It's he's held steady with his velocity, which bodes well. And he's going from American League to National League, which, you know, probably is good for a 4/10 of an ERA, a 4/10 of a run a game in your ERA. So it's basically what you're paying. You know, if Detroit eats some of that contract, it's not much more than you're paying for Arrieta, and you don't plan to sign Arrieta after.
No, they're not going to. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the money is not really the concern for the Cubs. It's the assets we already have.
And so, I mean, for the remainder of this season is you have Arrieta and Verlander. And then next year is you just – Verlander is the big contract that you have. And, you know, he's that number two and hopefully number three guy if Hendricks comes back strong.
That's a big thing right there. They need to get Kyle Hendricks back, and they need to have him pitch decently because, you know, this rotation is really suffering right now. And Mike Montgomery, I think he's done yeoman's work. I pat him on the back, and he's really working himself. You know, I can't be mad at him. I mean, you look at a lot of his starts, he's had decent outings, but again, he has had very little run support. And he's not really built to go deep. He's a bottom-of-the-rotation guy when he does start, so you can't be mad, really, at Mike Montgomery, but you need Kyle Hendricks back.
That's a definite. You need him back. I mean, right now, is you're relying on a bunch of question marks in your whole rotation. Is Lester should be the one name you pencil in, and after a game like today, you can't do it. Arrieta's been hot and cold. Lackey has been hot and cold. Eddie Butler's a rookie, so by definition he's hot and cold, and Mike Montgomery is a middle reliefer.
And unfortunately Lackey's been a bit more cold than hot this year.
Much more. I mean, I would say other than a couple of very good starts, he's been abysmal this year for the most part.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's giving up the home runs. He's among the top in home runs given up, and doesn't really go deep into ball games. I mean, the guy's almost 40 years old, so obviously he doesn't really have it anymore. I mean, every now and then he'll have a nice game and his stuff will look sharp, but it's really not happening consistently, or more than not this year. It's been more bad than good, because last year, before the postseason, he was a very solid pitcher. And, well, not anymore.
Yeah, and so you got to figure he's done. So what are you going to go in with next year? You got to have somebody. And is Lester or is Verlander a name in 2017 that excites you? Probably more so than in 2018 or 2019, but still not that exciting. And the only other thing I can think of is maybe the Cubs try to bring back Travis Wood in a trade. But I don't see the Royals being sellers.
Not now. I mean, they were a month ago, but now things have really turned. There was something interesting I heard on 670 The Score yesterday, and I kind of want to get your opinion on it and kind of think out loud with you on this. Do you think the Cubs should have been more willing to have brought Jason Hamill back? I know Jason Hamill isn't having a very good year with Kansas City, but, I mean, in his time with the Cubs, in his NL service, he's been pretty good. He's been better than more than he's not been better. So, you know, at first, during the offseason, I didn't think it was going to be a huge loss, but now that I look back at it, having him and hopefully bringing the serviceable things he brought the past few years wouldn't be a bad thing to have.
My thoughts on him are he had spots, you know, runs where he was a very good pitcher. And then he had runs where he was just abysmal, and it was usually like the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. He was kind of worthless for the playoffs. But I still feel like for the amount of money he was making for a starting pitcher in this league, you probably would expect a team to, like the Cubs, to keep him for that, you know, affordable of a contract. I just wonder what he was like in the clubhouse. That's my big my big question mark. Is a guy like that with those kind of stats, even though they, if you would have averaged him out over the season and he had, like, you know, ups and downs throughout the season rather than great first half and bad second half, you would think you'd want to keep a guy like that around. So I just wonder what's happening behind the scenes that facilitated his leaving.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they were also saying that on the radio, like they were kind of surprised why they didn't kind of maybe try to at least offer him back. Maybe they didn't think they needed him. Maybe there was something there that we don't know about. It's really hard to know. We don't know what goes on in the clubhouse. So, but yeah, I figured I'd kind of bring that up as an interesting thought because, I mean, right now the rotation is a shell of its former self. How good it was last year compared to how bad it is now. And last year was interesting. The offense could have off days where they weren't doing much, but the Cubs would still find ways to win because the pitching would keep you in there. But in addition, what I think is the most frustrating part is how bad the defense has been. I don't know how to explain that one.
Absolutely. And sorry to derail this a little bit. I was just pulling up stats for Verlander. And
yeah,
last season, he had a 3 ERA with a 1 whip, 10 Ks per 9, 2 walks per 9, pitched 227 innings, and had a 6.6 WAR.
Yeah, that's he was awesome. Really good last year.
I believe he was a finalist for the Cy Young for AL.
Yeah, remember when Kate Upton went on that Twitter rant?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because he lost to Rick Porcello.
Yeah, so, you know, he's 6 months removed from that. So it's not like his stats are that outrageous. I mean, his FIP is half a run lower than his ERA, which is...
He also doesn't have a very good Tigers team behind him, and I'm not saying that's the sole reason his numbers aren't good this year, but you got to keep in mind that it does probably contribute at some point or another.
I mean, he's still got, he's 8.5 Ks per 9. His walks are up. He's up to 4, but his home runs are down from last year, his home run rate. It's not like he's a bad pitcher. It's just... It's a bad contract.
It's a bad contract, and it's a guy who's got a lot of miles on him.
Oh, he's got a lot of miles. He's pitched in the bigs 2,500 innings.
Yeah, and he was, what, averaging over 200 innings per year, basically.
Yeah, I mean, his rookie season was 186. 201, 201, 240, 224, 251, 238, 218, 206, 133, but that was an injury season, 227, 104 in this season. So he's on pace.
So from 07 to 2014, he pitched over 200 innings completely full through that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a lot of miles on there, but again, is that velocity is held consistent over the last couple of years, which, you know, that's a big plus,
right? And like I said, he obviously dropped off compared to where he was in the Cy Young years, but what a lot of people said and what I say is good is that he's been able to maintain a lower, not low, but lower velocity consistently and find ways to kind of adapt his game to it. Took him a year or so, but he kind of readapted and found a way. And, you know, you just can't help but wonder if Verlander going to another location, change of scenery, would maybe do him some good. But, again, it's not a good contract, and the Tigers are going to want to try to rebuild. And, you know, you got to find a way to get him to not give up your top assets, because you're not going to do that with a 34-year-old pitcher with a ton of miles on him. So... if you can get him by just kind of doing more paying with cash than less giving of assets, then that would be the most ideal and likely scenario for the Cubs to get him.
Yeah, because the Tigers, if they're going to be bad and they're going to rebuild, they're going to want to trim roster. And there's not a lot of teams that have the money to pick up a big chunk of the contract for a guy like Verlander. But the Cubs do. And if they pick up a good deal of it, but the Tigers still pay some of it, it's not that bad of a contract. Even if you're paying $18, $19 million a year for a guy that's, you know, averaging 15, 18 wins a season for the last several years. That's not so bad.
Right. I said, I'm not worried about the money. I'm really not. So.
Yeah, I just don't want to give up a pick for him. Or, I mean, a player for him. Or, you know, at least a top guy. Is
he's right, not, neither
he's
do
not
I.
worth it.
Is no.
If you're trading somebody that's a big asset, is you want to bring home somebody that's going to be with you for a long time and be under financial control for a long time.
Right. You'd want an Archer, Quintana, or something like that. It wouldn't be an older Justin Verlander.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just don't know what trades you can do in this offseason that's going to propel this team. I just think, you know, this is kind of a lost year, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it a few days ago where I could see the Cubs kind of just riding the ship and not doing much at the deadline, but it's kind of hard to know what to expect from the Cubs because we kind of expect the unexpected. So, I can't say for sure what's going to happen, but maybe they do just kind of ride this out. You kind of cut your losses and say, all right, well, let's come back next year. Also, we talked about it earlier, and people are talking about it again. If you fall really behind, would you be willing to trade Wade Davis and just kind of, quote, give up on this season? But I don't think we could really determine that until, like, the week of the deadline. If the Cubs fall, like, double digits back, then I'd be a lot more tempted to do that.
Oh, yeah. You pull what the Yankees did with Aroldis Chapman. I don't see a problem because if you know that you can't catch the Brewers and you know you're not catching the wild card team, if you can get a huge return for Wade Davis, I mean, just imagine what the Nationals would give up for
Wade
Davis.
I was just thinking that
because. I mean, they don't want to. Their holdup with the Robertson thing is they don't want to take on any more salary.
Right. So, right. This is much better for them financially.
Yeah, much better financially, and it's absolutely much more dominant player. Is if you could send him over there, that has to vault them into a favorite for the World Series.
Exactly. And now, look, I'm not saying go out and do that right now. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if we're in a scenario where the Cubs are back double digits and it really seems clear that they are not going to contend this year, then I think that is a path you have to consider going down. I'm not just saying, oh, we're 10 back. Okay, trade Wade Davis. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that you got to consider it. You got to shop around, and if you think you could get a great deal that'll benefit you immediately for the next season, then I think that's something that they'd be willing to take. And don't get me wrong, I love Wade Davis, I'd love to see him around, but if that scenario does arise, you got to listen to some offers that they could potentially get. It's interesting, I was saying with some people, if this Cubs team just comes back roaring next year and they are who they are and they continue to do good things and this year was just kind of a blip in the road, then so be it. It's just really frustrating seeing this blip in the road because we didn't really expect it at this level. So that's, I think, the most important part of the season is these next few weeks after the All-Star break. This is going to make or break their season. This is going to tell them we're still in this or we're really not still in this. And it makes things a little more difficult because the team that's ahead of us is a Brewers team that really isn't high on a lot of people's lists and was never really high even when they were winning so far this season. And a team that could still very well just kind of bottom out in the second half considering how their team really is as a whole and what holes they actually do have. So there's a lot of complicated scenarios right now.
Yeah, it's really complicated. And I know people are going to complain that we suggested that if they should listen to offers for Wade Davis. Think about it. he's only signed through this season. So if the Cubs aren't going anywhere and you trade him away, it's not like you had him under contract for next season. You could still go in the offseason and re-sign him just the same
just
way
like the have. Yankees. If they did that, I'd be ecstatic.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a Gleyber Torres level player for trading away Wade Davis in a bust year, and you could re-sign him in the offseason again, why wouldn't you do it?
And I think that one thing I would say is if they were to make a trade like that, I think they'd be more wanting a closer or major league ready young player, not, you know, someone as low as Gleyber Torres, but that's my opinion.
Well, I mean, he's probably going to be on the team next year, but the Yankees were in a different spot than the Cubs.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I would not be opposed to at least listening to it. But if, you know, if obviously if you're come the All-Star, I mean the trade deadline, if you're within striking distance of the Brewers and you see turnaround in the play, then you don't do it.
Right, exactly.
But if exactly. if you fall to 8 games behind the Brewers come the All-Star, the trade deadline, if you're 8 games, 9 games back of the Brewers and probably 12 games out of the wild card, then what's the point? Is you're just wasting opportunity.
Right. You got to listen. And this is if this scenario arises. Who the heck knows? They could come storming out of the gates in the second half and the Brewers can fall apart right away and next thing you know, they're back in it. We don't know what's going to happen, but we are at a point where you have to at least consider the fact that this team might not make the postseason. Because right now, the chances are looking significantly lower than they were at the start of the season. At the start of the season, they had like a 99.9% chance of making the postseason. It's still a higher chance, but it's not a guaranteed chance like it was. Especially when you're 5 games back right now. It's still a manageable deficit. But with the way this team has showed no consistency, with the way they have struggled with everything across the board, especially the starting pitching and defense, you have to realize that there are different scenarios for different actions. And because of where the Cubs are right now, they have to keep these scenarios in mind. And so do the fans. They got to be prepared for this kind of thing. I think that saying sell, sell, sell is way over the top because they're never going to do that. You would agree.
Yes.
Yes, you agree.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. They're not going to... There are some people going off that deep end, and that's too far.
You know what's hilarious? So I'm looking at projections for the playoff probabilities as mm-hmm. of yesterday. Based on mathematics,
mm-hmm.
And the Cubs I'm going to go from the bottom of the division to the top. The odds of making the playoffs, the Reds are 0.2%.
Not surprising.
Pirates are 7.7%.
A little lower than I thought, but okay.
The Brewers are at 30.5%.
Wow.
The Cardinals are at 31.4%. The Cubs are at 65.5% still.
Yeah, I mean, I knew they were above 50%. You know, this is actually interesting. I just did a Twitter poll before this show started, and it's already got 87 votes. And I asked, how high is your confidence in winning the Central? And one option was 80 to 100%. The other was 60 to 70. One was below 50, and one was no chance. And 44%, by far the dominant choosing, is 60 to 70% right now. So that, you know, that goes to show right there that I think that there are a lot of projections and a lot of opinions that kind of match up with that.
Yeah, and the odds of going to their winning the World Series is Cubs are third in the National League still.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Let me guess. The Dodgers and the Nationals are in front of them.
Yeah. But the Rockies are less than 1%. and the Cubs are at 7.3%.
You know, I'm high on the Rockies team, but I'm also not shying away from an opinion or a thought that they may just kind of tank the second half, because they've done that before.
And the only teams with a 0% chance of the World Series are the Phillies, the White Sox, the Orioles, the Reds, the Padres, and the Giants.
Yeah, well, none of that is really surprising.
Yeah, I'm just not sure where they're basing this on, just because I mean, the Cubs obviously have a far superior talent to the Brewers, but
right.
When you play this poorly, it's really hard to just turn it on like a light switch.
I know, exactly. And it's been this on-off way the entire season.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no consistency. And it would be one thing if people weren't hitting, but it's a combination of pitchers aren't pitching, hitters aren't hitting, and fielders aren't fielding.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what I said about the defense. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
And it's funny because during the playoff run last year, is basically all of the national people said, this team is just going to just rubber stamp them into the playoffs every year for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
Us people in Chicago were pretty much like, no, we want to win this right now because there might not be a next year.
Yeah, I mean, if we had to sell our souls last year, I'm kind of glad we did, because at least we'll always have that.
Yeah, that's my thinking, is you can't ever take that World Series title away from us, and we saw it. We witnessed it. We felt it.
Right.
Everything. Even if they disappoint us and don't make the playoffs this year or next year or the year after or whatever, we still have that World Series.
Right, exactly. And we could say we saw it. You want to hear something interesting about the defense?
Sure.
So it's fifth highest in errors, but it's in the top of defensive runs saved. And it is telling exactly what I have been saying about this defense all year, is that they'll make the amazing diving play to save a run, but they will botch the most routine of plays. I mean, don't you think that says something with those stats as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's pretty much the eyeball. That I'm glad that what those statistics show matches the eyeball test.
It does.
And it's so frustrating to watch, because it's one thing if they're dominated and outclassed by a better team, but when they're losing to bad teams and they're playing badly and they're getting blown out by a team like the Pirates, like that just shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, look how much they struggled against the San Diego Padres. Look at this awful, 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 awful Phillies team. Yeah, they took 3 of 4 of them from Wrigley Field, but they really had to grind out those victories. They didn't dominate any of those games by any means. And I went back last year and watched 2016 highlights, and I saw those highlights against, like, the Phillies and the Padres and a lot of those bad teams. Talk about just merciless destruction. You didn't see any of that this year against those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still looking at these playoff odds, and it definitely predicts the Phillies to be a 100 loss team.
Oh, they're terrible. They're I mean, so I always bad. Said that it was going to be the Padres to be the worst team in baseball. Phillies.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants are going to be pushing 100 losses.
Yeah, I mean, I was not high on them at all this year, and a lot of people thought I was kind of crazy, but I'm like, I'm not high on them, but I didn't expect this.
Well, I didn't expect them to be worse than the Padres.
No, neither did I.
I mean, I knew the Phillies were going to be bad. I mean, right off the bat, I was like, pencil in the White Sox as being bad, pencil in the Phillies to probably be the worst team in baseball, pencil in the Reds to be bad, pencil in the Padres to be bad, and they're all bad. But the Pirates being this bad and the Giants being this bad are not, I wouldn't say shocking, somewhere between a little bit surprising, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. I would agree with that.
I mean, not that, like, you know, if you would have told me that, oh, they would be this bad, I could retrospectively look back and be like, oh, the some of the signs are there, but still, it's, you expected a little bit more out of teams that have done well in the last couple of years and have still have some talent.
Oh, for sure.
But this is, I just don't know what people are expecting from this Cubs team, because they are what they are. Like Theo said, that this is the answers are on this team, and if they don't figure it out, bringing somebody in is not gonna completely turn it around. You know, bringing in an outsider.
I mean, let's face it, the pitching, the starting pitching has to get better. The timely hitting has to get better. The defense has to get better. Like I said, don't complain about the bullpen. That's been the best part of this Cubs team. You've seen a lot of these losses where the starters give up the early runs and the bullpen keeps them in it, but the offense can't come back. I mean, look at that. I think that says a lot right there. The bullpen has been the best part of this, let's say it's been the most consistent part of this Cubs team.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, even more so to the fact that you're not going to find the answers in a deadline trade, is there's not that many teams that are ready to trade. In the American League, it's probably the Orioles, the Blue Jays, Detroit, Oakland, and the White Sox. You can cross off White Sox because they're not trading with you in the one asset that they have that you would like. Oakland has one asset that they want, and I don't think they're going to let the Cubs have it without just running them through the ringer.
Oh, God, no, especially considering what they did get Addison Russell.
Yeah. Detroit has they have a catcher and a pitcher that you might be interested in. Toronto has one pitcher, but I hear they're not going to get rid of him.
Right.
And Baltimore doesn't have anything that you need.
Right, we need pitching, and they don't have pitching at all.
The Phillies are going to be sellers. They don't have anything.
What are they going to sell?
Like, yeah, they're garbage.
Clay Buchholz, maybe? Is that it? They have no value whatsoever.
I don't know what the Giants are. The Giants don't have anything that you want.
I know there's talks about Cueto and Samardzija, but, you know, it's...
I don't want Samardzija. I don't want him within a 10... I don't want. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. Cueto, maybe, but I don't know. He scares me. Like, I just don't trust him. San Diego has nothing you want. Cincinnati has nothing you want. The Mets aren't trading anything because they feel like they're just going to come back next year. And
right. I mean, with all the injuries and whatnot.
And I just feel like Miami, Pittsburgh, and Atlanta. Well, Atlanta's rebuilding, so they're not going to trade anything. The Cardinals aren't trading anything with you, and Pittsburgh and Miami feel like Miami, I don't know what they have that you really want, but Pittsburgh feels like they're within the division race.
Right, and I'm not really sure they'd want to trade in division anything big, so, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, the options really aren't there. It's not like last year where we said, oh, we need a closer, there's Andrew Miller, there's Aroldis Chapman, there's Benito Betanzos. There's multiple guys you could go after. There was Mark Melanson, but, you know, the stuff that we need this year isn't all just kind of spat out like ding, 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 look at all these options. The options are very limited.
Yeah, it's, I just don't even know what to say, is because there's no magic fix for this team. There's no magic fix.
Right.
There's a trade if you're close and you need that boost, but they need to figure a lot of stuff out.
Right. I mean, the only thing I could say, really, the fact of the matter is, you got to play better. You got to play better fundamentals. You got to pitch better. You got to be more efficient. You got to stop giving up these first inning runs. You got to go deeper into ball games. You got to hit timelier. We all know they have to do that better, but it's not, you know, snap of a finger, oh, they're doing everything better. It doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, if you're Jed and Theo is, I mean, do you hold Pat and just say, you know what, this season's a wash. We go at them next year in the off season to try to fix the problems and start fresh. Or do you try to give them that boost and maybe overpay for somebody to try to give them that boost?
Well, again, we got to see how these next few weeks before the deadline go. Like, I think that this Orioles series is huge. They have to come out swinging. They got to play good baseball the next week or so after that break. That's really going to kind of determine what's going on. There's a lot of different scenarios here. We know that if they're starting to win again, we know they're not going to force anything. Maybe they make a trade to get a little boost, but if they're playing a lot better, maybe that, you know, they kind of just say, all right, we're doing better, so let's maybe try to make a deal, but if not, we'll stand pat. If they're kind of in the middle, they'll probably stand pat, but if they're double digit deficit, then maybe they start listening to offers to away Davis or maybe one other person. But I'm gonna say this once, I'm gonna say this again. They're not going to do any fire sale type stuff, and I can't believe there are people actually suggesting that. That is not going to happen, and just no.
Yeah, it's silly. They have too much young talent to do a fire sale.
And that's another thing we have to keep in mind here. This team is still extremely young.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, though, and I would completely understand if you or any of our listeners would disagree, but I pretty much see Ian Happ and Kyle Schwarber being the same player for the most part. Is, do you need both?
Well, I think Happ will be better defensively.
Probably, I mean, a little bit better defensively, but, and he's faster, but I would say that Schwarber has the potential for more pop in his bat. I mean, both guys have a pretty good pop in their bat. But I mean, honestly, do you need both guys? Can you live with one and part with the other one?
I think that's a very fair question to ask, and I think a lot of people are asking that question. It just seems to me, based on what the Cubs have said, that they do not want to get rid of Kyle Schwarber at all. But a lot of people are encouraging them that they have to. But also keep in mind that in the case of Kyle Schwarber, if you're talking about him, he's probably have to get his value up a little more. I'm not saying he doesn't have any value considering how young he is and considering what he has accomplished in his young career despite the struggles this year, but I still think that there's more value to be... I mean, I know there's a lot more value to be had, and it would, you know, selling him right now give you a right value that he's equal to? I don't know. With the struggles, I don't know. But one good thing is pointing at Schwarber right now. Since he's come back from AAA, at least he's shown some signs of life. So we'll see how he keeps that going over the next few weeks. And I'm not saying that the Cubs are going to look and sell him, because I really don't think they will. I'm just saying from a value perspective.
Yeah, but here's the predicament. Is if you are a Cubs team and you're at the top of the world, win a World Series, are you motivated to make a trade and get rid of some of your young players for maybe starting pitching or pitching prospects? You don't really have motivation at that point. And when you're not playing, and when you're not playing well, like now, is your players aren't at the highest value that you can get for them, so you are not motivated to sell. So when is the right time for the Cubs to trade from their embarrassment of riches to fill in gaps and holes that they have?
Well, again, I think it's going to come down to between now and the trade deadline. I keep saying this. I sound like a broken record, but that's really going to determine a lot. If they start winning, then they're probably not going to do it. But if they really look bad, then maybe you got to say we got to do something drastic here. I don't know. I see it that way. Maybe that's not how Theo's thinking at all. I could be completely wrong. That's just kind of how I see it.
Yeah, it just sucks, though, is because right now is some of their trade prospects aren't at their peak value.
Right.
And
like what I was saying about Schwarber.
Yeah, but last year when they were all at their peak value is you didn't want to trade them because you liked what you had.
And, so and it's they like were winning.
Yeah, it's a conundrum because when they're not playing well, they're not as valuable. But that's when you need to trade them to fill holes. But when you're good, that's in their highest value, but you don't want to trade them because you're playing well. So the Cubs are in a tough spot. And
yes, they are.
And you're absolutely right, is these next like 3 weeks are going to determine the Cubs, not only their life going into the playoffs, you know, the odds of going to the playoffs, but whether or not it's worth making a trade. And you're dead on when you say that if they show a lot of life and they're starting to show some consistent play and they turn, you know, the bats, they don't have to be, you know, everybody creaming the ball and scoring 20 runs a game, but seeing some more consistency and seeing better at bats and seeing a couple of guys catch a streak, and the starting pitching getting a little more consistent and the defense reducing errors, especially in key situations, then, and you see the results in your standings in the National League Central, then you're like, all right, well, maybe now we make this trade. But if they don't, it's more of the same, is it worth it? Because even if you do squeak into the playoffs by backing in because the Brewers implode, then really you're just all that's going to happen is you're going to get creamed by the Dodgers or the Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. With baseball, I truly think that if you make it, you have a really good chance either way. It's not like the NBA. But, you know, right now, even if this team does make the playoffs, I'm not picking them to win the World Series by any means. But, you know, I think this is a scenario where the Cubs, they get in, then, you know, they have a chance. I just... For me, seeing it with baseball is just differently. I truly think every team that makes it does have a chance, for the most part. But, you know, we'll see how it goes in the second half.
Yeah, but, you know, having a chance and having a legitimate chance are kind of different things. Is, you know, like, I agree with you that baseball is a much bigger crapshoot than a NBA where, you know, the team with the most stars wins. And you can kind of pencil in who's going to win, especially in nowadays. But you know, you could have a year like the Cardinals a couple of years ago where it came in as the wild card and caught fire and mowed down everybody. But it's just this team has not shown their ability to be able to do that this year.
I know, and that's really what's frustrating is that you, at least if we could have had a sign of things turning around, like let's say they took this series, or maybe if they even swept the series, you could say, okay, you would have gained another game on Milwaukee. Heck, let's look back at the past week. If we could have had three more wins, one against Milwaukee in that makeup, and a few against the Pirates, the situation we'd be in would be completely different. We'd be right on the Brewers' tail, and we'd probably just be anticipating a runaway in the second half. I mean, you could agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree.
But unfortunately, that's not the situation we're in. So what it kind of shows is that, yeah, right now it doesn't look good, but a few games right off the bat that go in your favor can completely turn it around. So it makes the situation all more complicated and it makes it a bit more mysterious. But if you are going off these trends, the chances look worse than not than they did a little while ago, because a month ago they were still really frustrating, but there was still that wiggle room in time where you could say that they were going to turn it around and you weren't that far behind of Milwaukee. But that's not the case now. So it just makes everything more complicated.
Yeah, this is just a weird situation to be in. You're too good to break up a team, and you're not good enough to be a strong contender for the playoffs by the All-Star break. And
you knew no matter what, this was never going to be a break up the team scenario. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so Jed and Theo have their work. Their salaries cut out for them right now because it's, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And we are still in the infancy of trade rumor stuff. Hopped on MLBtraderumors.com, which is a pretty reliable source, and there's barely anything going on so far.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like you were saying about the White Sox. The most I've heard about a White Sox trade is that Brewers-Quintana thing. I mean, other than that, I've heard nothing on their end. And on the Cubs' end, it's a lot of speculation. There was the whole thing with the Tigers. We talked about that. And, you know, other than that, really not much. The most I've heard is, a potential target that they would have, like an Archer, is not going to be traded. Same with Stroman, so cross those off the list. That we've heard more just flat-out no's than actual, like, trade rumors and whatnot.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's just the weirdness of this season.
You know, I was thinking earlier today, and this is kind of a prediction of mine, and I could be completely wrong, but I think after this stinker of a season, I'm actually feeling pretty confident that next year they're gonna come just roaring out of the gates. I know it's way too early to say that. I know we haven't made any moves yet, but I could kind of see this being like kind of the Blackhawks, where they made it to their respective league finals, and then they lost, and then they won the championship, and then the next year or so was the hangover/retool period, and then after that, they were playing their best sport. So maybe that kind of goes the same with the Cubs, because there's one thing for sure, I am not throwing out the potential of this young core going on other World Series runs. It just may not be this year.
Yeah, and it's not just going to be the players that come out strong next year. It's going to be Joe Maddon with a new philosophy and having the offseason of looking back on what went wrong. And Jed and Theo going, all right, we weren't brought into town to do this. One and done. We were here to build a dynasty, and they're going to do their parts as well.
Yeah, I just, everything about this season has been so weird. I feel like everyone's on a different page. The first 2 years, everyone was on the same page. I just feel like there's Theo saying one thing about Schwarber, Joe Mann saying something else. Joe Maddon is saying, well, they played a good game even though they lost countless times. You had the whole Miguel Montero stuff in the clubhouse making you think that the clubhouse wasn't as happy-go-lucky as it was last year and the year before. The only thing you really heard about last year of the Cubs clubhouse that was negative was, you know, Chapman didn't seem like a shining teammate, but you don't have to be a genius to figure that one out, and it didn't seem to get to them in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it ended last year with them rallying together and winning the World Series, and now you're hearing about these, you know, these issues with Montero, and they took care of that, luckily, but I just feel like the philosophy, the consistency, and everything that's going on, it's scattered all over the place.
Absolutely, I fully agree. A lot of odd season with the weird injuries and the complete regression in defensive play, and
you know, I'll say this as well, we're not catching the same breaks that we did last year. It seemed like we smashed a ball, it fell on grass. This year we're smashing the ball and it's in a glove. I mean, I just think the breaks are breaking differently.
Yeah, and part of it is being, you know, you got to learn how it's easy to play when you're the underdog. It's harder to play when you're wearing the crown.
Especially when your team is full of a bunch of young people, because when young people are as high as the Cubs were last year, you know, mentally that puts you in a different state a lot of the time. And maybe they have to realize that. I don't know what goes on in their heads, but maybe they do.
Yeah. So I think we've talked ad nauseum about this Cubs team. Let's end it with, we're going into the All-Star break. How many wins do you see the Cubs having at the end of the season, and do they win the division? We'll note this and just kind of for fun see how our predictions went come the end of the season.
I am going to predict 87 wins. I'm going to be bold, and I'm still going to say the Cubs are going to win the division. I really don't think the Brewers are going to keep this up. They have a lot of problems still, and they got a lot of holes, despite having a really good, you know, establishment already. They've got a bright future, but this year, right now, I just don't see them continuing this. And I have trouble seeing them mortgaging their future. I really do. Because you look at a lot of the Brewers stats and, you know, some things aren't so great. But I'm going to say 87 wins and they are going to squeak out a division. And I still will say that I am more scared of the Cardinals than I am the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm actually going out on a limb and saying that they win 84 games and they finish second to the Cardinals.
I mean, the Cardinals have been pretty bad this year, but they always find a way to just BS their ways to wins, even when they're bad.
That's what they do. That is the Cardinals' way.
I mean, think about it. Their offense this year hasn't been good, their pitching hasn't been good, and their defense has been atrocious, yet they'll find a way. You know they'll find a way. They'll yep. pull wins out of their rear end.
They're tied with the Cubs right now.
Right. And as bad as the Cubs have been, as inconsistent, you could argue that you saw even uglier baseball from the Cardinals this year. Maybe that's because you're so not used to seeing it from the Cardinals that it kind of dilutes it a little bit, but still.
Yeah. I mean, the Brewers have the second worst winning percentage out of any division-leading team, except for the Indians. And the Indians started off really slow this year, and they're on fire right now.
Right.
I mean, if there was a five or seven game series between the Indians and the Brewers, I would put all the money I had on the Cleveland winning that one.
Yeah, and I mean, plus going down the stretch, you know, the more talented team is Cleveland.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's going to do it for this episode, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, I just hope the guys get some rest over the All-Star break, and well, that's all I could say. Hope for the best.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. If you guys want to weigh in on what you think is going to happen with the Cubs, hit us up on Twitter at ShyFanPat1 or at Swirsky Sports. Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Tell your friends. And thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go Bears.